communist bloc. Roy Khan, Warperon, Tuscanini, Dacron, Din Din, Pooh Falls, rock around the clock. Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's got a winning team. Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Princess Grace, Cakey Grace, trouble in the Suez.
We didn't start the fire.
Spears broadsides. My broadsides are pointed your way, and I hope you're ready to hit the phone lines. Phone to reach this show program is 427-3772. The Free Radio Santa Cruz hotline is always hot, at least always during this show. So do give us a call at 427-3772. Today, as I said before, we're covering the sleeping ban, the debacle at City Council last Tuesday, and again, the slicing off of the Lee tenants of the Dolphin Lee from the rest of the affordable housing project, plus the special call-ins from San Jose of Daniel Garcia's sister. Daniel Garcia has been dead a year, but his sister is still fighting for justice. And so are we. You're tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'll be with you on this July 27, 2000 show for the next hour and 50 minutes, and hopefully you will join me as well. We're going to try to move right along. I've actually got a kind of a schedule on this show, which is unusual. I don't usually have it quite this well planned. Is a little strong, but I'm working on it. I've talked in past shows about the Brown Act. Brown Act is a state law which requires legislative bodies like the City Council, Board of Supervisors, state legislature, anybody elected by the people, to hold a public process in what they do so that they actually allow the public to know what they're doing and to contribute to what they're doing and to have a voice in what is going on and to know beforehand what the subject matter is and so forth. Now, you might say, what the hell difference does it make, because City Council has been so unresponsive to the public generally in terms of at least certain of the issues that concern poor people, ranging from rent control to living wage to protection of homeless people from beatings to the right to sleep at night to eliminating discrimination against the homeless in things like the downtown ordinances, where it's illegal for homeless people to sit on the sidewalk or to ask peacefully for a dime after dark. What does it matter if they have a process that's open to the public but they never do anything? Well, the theory is that if there are pressing issues, that the public will eventually swamp the legislative chambers, both through the elections and through the process of sheer numbers. And therefore, it's important, while we're struggling through these dry periods where council members do choose to do nothing, do choose to run from select business interests, police pressure, things of this sort, it is important that we, the public, continue to press them on issues, to continue to get the truth out to the community, and continue to do so in recognized, respectable public forums, including the City Council. I'm not suggesting that people spend their lives in City Council. It's a really frustrating situation. I've been doing it for a long time, and I don't know why I continue to do it. But insofar as I do it, it's important to use all the tools at your disposal to make sure that your voice is heard, not cut off or muzzled or distorted or silenced. And the Brown Act is one way to go about that. It's a kind of a thick, I don't know, 20 or 30 page law, which I got a copy of from the city clerk some months ago, and then again some weeks ago, and again tonight, because tonight was the deadline for my filing some complaints about the city council and how it was conducting business at its meetings, well, specifically its meeting of June 27th a month ago. And you have been hearing from me about how the June 27th meeting, this was the meeting where they killed the safe zones, the much ballyhooed industrial zones where vehicles were supposed to be able to park and people sleep in them without harassment from the police, safe zones, safe from police harassment, hopefully safe from vigilante harassment, a legalized area for at least a certain part of the homeless population at last. Well, this was thrown out by Catherine Byers at 1:30 in the morning, or thereabouts, and before an audience of three or four people, I was one of them, in a manner that, in my mind, violated the rights of the community to know what she was doing and to be able to respond to it. The question of whether to vote on the issue of the safe zones was not on the agenda. What was on the agenda was whether to put that issue on the next city council agenda or to further delay it. Instead of doing either of those two things, what she did was she moved to withdraw publication, which meant that the safe zones law, which had been passed on May 23rd, a month before, and then inexplicably held off the agenda on June 11th, or was it June 13th, anyway, the earlier June city council meeting, in violation of pledges made to homeless activist David Silva, that this law was essentially, the first reading was annulled and the law had disappeared and from sight and was essentially sunk. Again, this was a violation of the Brown Act in my mind because it did not guarantee to the public an opportunity to know what was being discussed. All they knew was an item was mentioned, one of four items that Christopher Crone had brought forward, which talked about should the item be placed on the July agenda for the second Tuesday in July, which is when the next council meeting was. And people didn't think they had to come to the June 27th meeting and certainly not stay until 1:30 in the morning to discuss so technical a question. But instead, it suddenly appeared in full-blown force on the June 27th agenda and was killed. Unfair and a violation of the law. I've given the city council 30 days to respond to, as they have under the law, 30 days to respond to a charge they violated the Brown Act. If they can correct the violation in 30 days by holding a special city council meeting and taking that vote again. Now you say, well, who cares? I'll do the same vote. Yeah, but they have to have some kind of public comment on the matter before they do, and that means the community has to be heard from, and we get to hear about the people who are being driven off the streets, like I heard two nights ago from one of our ROAR, Restore Our American Rights members. That's the campers organization that occasionally has been on this show and has twice weekly meetings. They reported to me by phone that policemen are showing up at 8:30 and harassing people in vehicles and telling them they'll come back at 10 o'clock to give them tickets for being in their vehicles. Now, first of all, it's not a crime to be in your vehicle, even at 2 in the morning, provided you're not asleep, the famous sleeping ban in Santa Cruz. But at 10 o'clock, you can actually be asleep in your vehicle. It is not a crime between 8:30 in the morning and 11 o'clock at night, sleeping in your vehicle is not a crime. But the police, apparently, are criminalizing even that. So people need to know about this, and the more this reappears on the city council agenda, the more the issue is kept before the public, the more 700 to 1,500 homeless people are being denied their rights, have an opportunity to bring these issues before the public, the more chance there is of there being some kind of significant redress. So I brought that issue up. I brought up issues around secret meetings of the Mercy Charities Housing Advisory Board. That's the so-called affordable housing builder, developer, provider, and owner. They do all these things because the city council doesn't apparently want to have any competitive bidding process. And they are the ones who have had this secret Dolphin Lee plan to demolish the Dolphin and Lee apartments and, I guess, the Rex Court apartments across the street to build this showcase affordable housing project. It will be the feather in Mercy Charity's housing cap for $12.5 million, but which won't have any guarantees that the people that they're kicking out will be able to come back. What they did in January is the city council, which pays money to Mercy Charity, $70,000 a year, and is paying them specifically for this project as well, told them to have an advisory board meeting and asked them to abide by the Brown Act. They don't have to ask them. I find out it's mandatory that they abide by the Brown Act. What does that mean? It means that they can't close their meetings down to the public. But the first meeting I appeared at, they told me to leave. They told me their meetings were closed. And they've repeated that posture ever since, even when they came to speak to the tenants' organization, Residentes Unidos, in late June. They said, oh, we don't have to follow the Brown Act. We're a non-profit corporation. We're private. Well, it's true they're private, but it's also true the Brown Act applies to corporations where the board contains an elected member of the city council, Mayor Sugar, who sits on their advisory board, where the board contains a voting member who is, that is to say, if the mayor also votes in these matters, which he does, and if they get funding from the city, which they do, and so they violate the Brown Act. They should know this. They should respect the right of the public to be present at their meetings. They aren't doing that. And that's another complaint I had. I also complained that this is a meeting at which I was arrested, you may remember, for those of you who follow this saga closely. I was arrested because Mayor Sugar kept cutting off a speaker, the speaker before me, actually the speaker after me, at this 1:15 session where they decided to illegally destroy the safe zones without any real public input, without any public notice, really, at a time when people would not be likely to be there as well. What Mayor Sugar was doing was interrupting Becky Johnson, who's also my producer on this show and a close friend, and I don't feel anyone should be interrupted by the mayor. I reminded him that the public have a right to comment. He ordered me from the chambers and then had me arrested. It wasn't like I disrupted the meeting so that he could not proceed. It was he was punishing me for reminding him of the fact that he has a responsibility to allow the public commentary at the mic, not to interrupt them, and to essentially do so in a fair and equal manner, which he didn't do, because he was capriciously allowing public comment on some parts of Crone's four-part proposal, but not on others, which he had no basis for doing under the law. This is another part of this complaint. And it's really kind of a makeshift seat-of-the-pants complaint. I'm hoping it has some gets some force to it. I'm hoping that it at least causes the city attorney to respond. And the violations of open process continue by the mayor, by the city council members. We're going to be talking about these as we continue to look at the most recent dealings of the city council. Now, perhaps what people are most interested in, I know the subject of controversy for a lot of us, actually a no-brainer for a lot of us, but apparently major controversy for the city council, is that old sleeping ban 6.36 municipal code. That's the law that criminalizes anybody outsider in a vehicle after 11 o'clock at night to the tune of $54, or if they don't give you a ticket because they don't want the tickets to show up in the record, they just tell you to move along or face confiscation of your van or face confiscation of your property or face harassment. Sometimes they do so nicely, sometimes they do so not so nicely. But in essence, they deny you your rights as a human being. They interfere with a sleep schedule that for people who are struggling to get back on their feet who are homeless is an additional and cruel burden to do. Anyway, this law has been around since 1978. We've been fighting it, many of us, for at least a decade. We thought we had something with the safe sleeping zones, though not a great deal. We thought we had a beginning. Catherine Byers strangled that to death. We thought we had maybe a shadow of something when Tim Fitzmaurice came back with a proposal to put the sleeping ban on the ballot, but unfortunately his proposal was so flawed and so grotesque, and we talked about that last time, and it wasn't a legal proposal, it didn't really cause a change in the law, it just told the next city council to consider changing the law. It kept it illegal to sleep in vehicles, and it also made it even worse. You could be arrested simply for occupying a vehicle after 11 o'clock at night, not even being asleep. So it made it worse for homeless people in vehicles. And finally, it didn't give any indication of why the citizenry should adopt a proposal that would make it legal for people to sleep on, say, public sidewalks in front of public buildings, at City Hall, in parking lots, when this is not really a very comfortable or even suitable place for people to sleep. And you're going to hear people saying, this is a stupid idea, we don't want people sleeping all over town, this is what would be allowed. Of course, the reality is people are already sleeping all over town. people are sleeping where there are no dumpsters or porta potties because the city, in violation of the Crone Bathroom Task Force's mandate of a year and a half ago, has refused to put them in, at least in the industrial zones. Police have been colluding with businesses to smear homeless activists who are trying to get them in place, and to smear homeless people who are simply trying to live, and you have to take a dump sometime, and you have to take a dump somewhere, and you have to dispose of your trash. And if the city insists on locking its dumpsters, closing its bathrooms, and essentially treating homeless people as if they don't exist, they'll learn that non-existent people produce waste, just like those non-existent tens of thousands of people who flood the city to go to the boardwalk produce many, many times more waste than Santa Cruz's 700 to 1,500 homeless people. It's a fact that I think is often overlooked. But what we have at City Council, or what we had at City Council on Tuesday, was a rather astonishing sellout. And I talked a bit about a meeting with Michael Schmidt that activists had a week ago Friday. Actually, last Friday. Last Friday, Michael Schmidt, the area CEO for the Chamber of Commerce, area Chamber of Commerce CEO, who has been pushing for rights for homeless people for some strange reason. I've never been really clear why, except he had sort of an epiphany at some point, and he saw a homeless person getting beaten, and he himself is a veteran, and he decided it was time to pay some attention to the issue and began devoting many hours a week to it from January on. City Council ignored him, and they downgraded his proposals, which included opening up the county parking lot, opening up the Santa Cruz Police Station parking lot for nighttime use by the homeless, opening up a parking structure number 10. They dismissed all these proposals. He suggested the armory. They said they'd look into that, but then the state said it wouldn't do it until after the elections at the earliest. In essence, they put the kibosh on everything he proposed. So he went more broadly and supported the Safe Sleeping Zones proposal, which went beyond what the Chamber of Commerce, who he is CEO for, actually supported itself. But he, as an individual, went further. And even after these safe zones were shot down, even after the ballot measure was strangled, without any kind of public input or discussion, that was done by Christopher Crone in an outrageous display, and we're going to see that shortly, or hear that shortly on the air. He is continuing to hold meetings. In fact, he has a meeting tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the Holiday Inn. For those, that's where the Chamber of Commerce has its offices, at Ocean Street and, if I can remember the name of that cross street, looking at Dakota Street. There we go. Dakota and Ocean, 2 o'clock tomorrow, if you want to be a part of the Schmidt Working Group on Homeless Rights. And that's going to go from 2 to 3:30. And last week what happened is that a number of activists, including Sherry Connable, myself, Becky Johnson, Doug McGrath, Marilyn Weaver, Jerry Henry, Dan Hopkins, and others, No Guns Radici, all a bunch of folks got together, and we talked about, what about this ballot measure? Wasn't it pretty horrible? It made it worse for people in vehicles. It was likely to be used by the other side just to kill the issue of homeless rights for the next decade. We talked about it, and we finally decided that we wanted to recommend to Tim Fitzmaurice, the maker of the resolution, was it needs to be strengthened, it needs to be clarified, but we have to put something on the ballot. Or, if he wants to take an even stronger stand, then don't put it on the ballot, but raise it as an issue at City Council. Push for a vote. If you don't get the fourth vote, but you have three strong votes and three strong voices speaking for ending the sleeping ban, for saying sleeping is not camping. These are different things. Survival sleeping is not having a weenie roast. You have to let people sleep. You can regulate camping, but you cannot regulate and bar sleeping. That's just something you cannot do. We suggested this to Tim Fitzmaurice, that it would be better if he could just have this as a council action where it was a law that was passed, because indeed the council didn't go to the voters in 1978 to change this. They themselves decided to make it criminal to sleep in Santa Cruz on all public and most private property as essentially an attack on hippies. That's what it was, to give the police more power after the success of the Scotts Creek Bluff people who won their longest misdemeanor trial in Santa Cruz County history, which we've talked about before on this station, on this program. So We asked Fitzmaurice to do this. The Schmidt Group did. Fitzmaurice apparently was not interested. We took this matter to Christopher Crone on the Monday before the Tuesday when council meets, when he usually has his session at the Pergolesi at 5:30, Cafe Pergolesi. And he listened very carefully and nodded gravely and said, oh, yes, very interesting, and had me place a couple of calls to him and fax him more of the documents. And then the first thing he did, after having us wait 4 hours at City Council, it was on the afternoon agenda, this issue of the ballot measure, what should be put on the ballot regarding the sleeping ban, he made a speech, which you're going to hear. I'm going to play you his speech. And then he moved to table. And that kind of motion means there can be no public comment, there can be no council comment, there can be no discussion at all. It just goes away. And he didn't inform one individual, didn't inform anybody, any activists, that this was going to happen. He had us sit on our tails and wait 4.5 hours to speak on the issue, and then said, sorry, you don't get to speak. I'm going to table this. And in essence, worse than that, he didn't allow for a discussion of any alternatives, like having the council take a better action. Because if the council doesn't act on this issue, the city council candidates who will be holding forums will be afraid of the issue. That, I'm sure, is the situation. And because the council is running right after Catherine Byers down the road, because they're afraid the district elections issue is on the ballot and they don't want a sleeping ban on the ballot, also because I think that will be a way of losing the district election issue, they're willing to play political football with homeless people and their rights because they haven't got the guts to take a stand that the voters told them 2 years ago they needed to take. Basic rights for homeless people. And what we're going to do now is hear that sorry spectacle. So grab your airline bags. You know, have a disposable doggy bag nearby, because here we go.
This is a resolution requesting the addition of a ballot measure for inclusion on the website 2012.
The sound gets much better, so be patient here.
I hope the council would vote on my remarks. I've been thinking a lot about this particular issue.
Council Member Christopher Crone.
The ballot issue before us tonight, in which the homeless and homelessness can be thrust into the political fight lines. Most of those who I trust and whose opinions I have confidence in and respect, but whose work on the front lines of homeless issues, and those who have been homeless and are now homeless, all council me and not place this issue on the ballot. And so I am in favor of addressing the complex web of issues involved in why someone is homeless. I have not yet been convinced that this measure will actually improve the lives of some of our most vulnerable community members.
Now let's pause here a moment and think about what Christopher Crone is saying. He says no homeless activists have asked him to put this on the ballot, or all have asked him not to put this on the ballot. It's true that none of us wanted the Fitzmaurice proposal making it illegal to occupy a vehicle at night on the ballot. We all told him that. What we told him we wanted was we wanted him to make an amendment that would make it a better measure. So he is either deliberately misleading or completely confused about this issue. And frankly, Crone is not that stupid. So I think he understands what he is talking about. He is misrepresenting what homeless activists told him. The Schmidt Group told him, make it a legal proposal, not just an advisory one. Make it legal for vehicles, for people to sleep in vehicles. And indeed, put on the ballot, sleeping is not camping, with a preamble that says homeless people face violence, homeless people face a shelter emergency, so that the community can understand what is going on. Crone didn't mention a word of that, and claimed instead that people didn't want anything on the ballot. This is not true. He also claims that a sleeping ban lifting will not affect the lives of homeless people. Considering this issue has been one of the most significant issues of the last 22 years, and certainly of the last decade, this is a preposterous statement for Crone to make. It's along the lines of what Rotkin and other conservative council members used to say we don't want to just have people sleep in the streets. We want to give them services and shelter. But until that glorious day, 500 years in the future, we'll keep arresting them for sleeping in the streets. This is the kind of absurd position that Crone is now taking. That's the most liberal council member on the city council. Note it well, because Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar are the only three council members who will be on the council in November, other than new people. These are the people into which we are entrusting our future, to which we have trusted on the issue of basic human rights. Continue with Crone's speech as to why he is not going to allow anything on the ballot and why he's not going to allow anybody to say anything about it.
In fact, I believe it could open up some, it could open this issue up more to those who want to use it for political gain. Those who do not mind turning our community's homeless population into a political football match for some ulterior motive. My work and my concern has always been, how can city government be a catalyst in channeling its efforts and resources for physical and financial into alleviating the suffering of those who are homeless? Is by creating opportunities.
How about the opportunity not to be arrested for falling asleep at night outside or in a vehicle? Wouldn't that be a nice opportunity to have? Crone, of course, doesn't have that problem, nor do I, for that matter. We sleep indoors. But there are plenty of people I know who do have that problem, some of whom look like ordinary individuals. They work at ordinary jobs. They cannot afford the rents in Santa Cruz. They sleep in their vehicles. This is criminal behavior in Santa Cruz. And it is criminal behavior to see Christopher Crone justifying this issue. If he were to be saying, I think we should have this on the ballot. I'm going to be defeated here, but I think we need not just to have this on the ballot, we need to vote on this at an emergency session, and I'm going to move for that. I'm going to be voted down, but you voters out there, watch these arguments carefully, see who's right, and put on the council some people who will vote with me in November. If Crone had said such a thing, we could have believed that his earlier votes in saying that sleeping is a human right, which he voted for back in 1998, had some substance to them, had some truth to them. But I'm afraid that his latest maneuver shows he is simply interested in politics as usual. Continuing again with Christopher Crone's speech, killing sleeping ban repeal on the ballot, and again, not allowing anybody to say a word about it from the public or from the city council.
Just like we try to do political businesses, just like we try to do political artists, and just like we have been trying to do for local teenagers, the people of Santa Cruz are truly supportive of channeling the city's political, intellectual, and financial capital toward improving the fight of that part of our community who are homeless. The initiative we have before us to place on the ballot in November is not what the people of Santa Cruz are asking us to address. I deeply and sincerely wish there would be an honest and informed community dialogue around this issue. But the way the issue has been framed in recent weeks, the outright misinformation masquerading as truth is making it impossible for this council member to vote in favor of the resolution in front of us. If this initiative were to pass, no, this ballot measure would not make it legal for someone to sleep on the front porch or the front lawn. No, the ordinance change would not make it legal to urinate or defecate in public. No, it would not make it legal for someone to park their RV in front of your house as long as they want. And no, you will not bring thousands of homeless people from all over the U.S. to Santa Cruz. These are just a few of the myths that have been masquerading as true right now.
And of course, Christopher Crone is quite correct. Here he debunks four myths that it's important to be debunked, that this would cause people to come from all over, that people could sleep on your lawn, that they could park in front of your house forever. All these are not true, and it's a good thing that he mentions it. Unfortunately, the other 95% of his speech propounds other myths and essentially does not forward the cause that people need to have the right to sleep at night. We hear nowhere in his speech, as we heard saw nowhere in the Sentinel the next day that covered it, or in the Mercury News' article today, that homeless people are here in numbers 700 to 1,500 strong, at least in the city, and they have 28 spaces to sleep on the floors of churches. That's 28 people are allowed to sleep legally each night out of over 1,000. Preposterous that there's a violence rate of 10 times that of people in houses by the conservative estimates of a police chief who's not very well known for his pro-homeless sympathies and kept those figures very tightly to his chest for many years. We don't hear Crone talking about those things. We don't hear the Sentinel talking about those things. We don't hear the Mercury News talking about those things. And therein lies the profound failure of Christopher Crone, Keith Sugar, Tim Fitzmaurice, and of course the other council members as well, Byers, Hernandez, Matthews, and Rotkin, of course. So the question, though, we have to ask ourselves is we're going to be stuck with these three council members, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, for the next 2 years. Fitzmaurice is potentially the next mayor. It is quite a frightening spectacle coming up around at least some of these issues. And you're going to hear more of Crone as he drones on, telling us, in essence, why he will not allow the public of Santa Cruz to vote on the sleeping ban, or actually more important, why he does not address the issue of why he doesn't try to make this into a good ballot measure. Instead, he poo-poos the issue, he jumps here, he jumps there, he kind of weaves together a pastiche of different kinds of arguments that people from different sides of the issue make. What really boils down to is political expediency.
What he's doing is making it increasingly difficult for homeless people to change their own situations. As each of these myths perpetuate, people's sympathies change toward the homeless. And there are some in our community who wish to have these myths perpetuated as fast as possible for what I consider craft political gain. Therefore, I'm against this ballot initiative for the following reasons. Number one, it's only an advisory measure. The initiative to fail, it would saddle the future city council with the fine-tuning and implementation of the initiative. That future council would also have to deal with whether they are actually implementing the will of the people, since it is admitted that a certain amount of tweaking would have to go on. And I dare say political tweaking. I believe it would be a nightmare for the next council or not actually to address this issue as some have suggested.
A nightmare for the next council. What about tonight for homeless people? That's a real nightmare, to have to worry a bit about being woken up at 11 o'clock at night, or beaten up at 11 o'clock at night, or perhaps jacked up by the city council and its false promises week after week, month after month, inventing imaginary little commissions that run around to issue real suggestions which the council ignores. This criticism that Crone has, that this is only an advisory measure, is really the only criticism that's very solid. But does he then say, therefore I move to make this have legal force and not simply be an advisory measure? No, he does not. He proposes no improvements in the ballot measure. He uses the obvious faults of Fitzmaurice's preposterous ballot measure to do nothing, to return things to square zero where they have been sitting. And people have been facing the kind of dehumanization that he would not wish on or allow for his children. But for the people of Santa Cruz who are poor, he has no such regard. He has power. He fails to use it. He uses it in the other direction, because the voices of Catherine Byers, John Laird, Marty Wormhout, and I have to say Celia Scott, who has not come out on this issue disgracefully, are telling him, lay low, defeat district elections, elect new people, forget about the homeless. This issue is a tar baby. You don't want to deal with it.
Number two, the medical establishment credo always has said, first, do no harm. And I ask every council member up here, if changing the language of the current camping ordinance that's being proposed in this ballot initiative would do no harm. The language is simply too vague and does not address what I believe is the real issue. That is creating opportunities for homeless people to leave their state of homelessness.
In other words, you don't want to make it legal for people to sleep, because that wouldn't create any real opportunities for people to leave their homelessness. You want to first make sure you've got some real opportunities before for them to leave their homelessness before you give them a chance to sleep at night. These arguments are so unwieldy, preposterous, and unpersuasive that you can begin to understand why Crone didn't want to have any debate after this, why he wanted to make sure that his slam dunk 4-3, rip the measure off the ballot, have nothing there in its place, passed without there being any public scrutiny or criticism of what he was saying. His arguments are preposterous. His arguments, worse than that, are very reminiscent of Rotkin, of Jane Yokoyama, of Marty Wormhout, of John Laird, of all those people who told us, we don't want the homeless to sleep in the streets, we want them to have affordable housing, and we'll keep fining them every night while they're sleeping until we get it. That was, of course, the last sentence was never spoken aloud.
Would not put toward making any substantial difference right now in the lives of people who are homeless. I believe the initiative intent of not criminalizing the curse of hard times is very noble, but I am convinced that the reality is that it is mostly a symbolic gesture without any real teeth. Our other initiative tonight was much clearer, much more precise, and will actually go towards creating housing for a currently unhoused population.
The other initiative that Christopher Crone was speaking of was the transient occupancy tax raise from 10% to 12%, which is now going to be taking up many hours of council time. They're actually going to hold a council meeting, a small kind of subcommittee meeting of the council, at 2 o'clock in the library, for those of you who are interested, tomorrow on Friday. On Monday, they'll be holding a full council meeting on the second floor of the library at 2 o'clock. And on Tuesday, they will be holding a full city council meeting at 3 o'clock, all to give the business community the opportunity to talk about why they don't want this small rise in the transient occupancy tax, whose money is supposed to go to homeless services. Now, as I said at city council, homeless services are an important thing to have. I like to see homeless services, particularly when they are broadly spread, like lockers and meals and shower facilities, phone use, mail service, things of that sort. But what's really being talked about for this TOT, and it's kind of vague, is they want a small shelter for a small number of people. And for Crone to seriously advance the proposition that eliminating the sleeping ban will have no impact on the lives of homeless people is truly preposterous. And he must know that. I mean, he has said exactly the opposite in the past. Why is he changing his tune now? Obviously, it's a political maneuver. He is, in fact, playing football with basic homeless rights.
Number four, since we are focusing on the law, which currently exists, makes it a crime to sleep in public, I believe this again, that if we pass the vote tonight, we're sending the wrong message to both the housed and the unhoused communities, that sleeping outside is really something we're trying to support and foster in this community. I do not, in fact, believe that this city council or past city councils think it is all right for a person to sleep outside when they would rather be inside.
Again, a ridiculous argument when you don't have the alternative for people to sleep inside. He's not proposing that he open his house and public buildings for the next 4 months to let people sleep inside, or for that matter after November, for there to be shelter for the 95% of over 1,000 homeless people in our city. Instead, he is proposing that nothing be done to stop the criminalization of homeless people that goes on every night. This is sheer sophistry.
And this is why I support the other ballot issue that we just discussed tonight. Number five, I do not support the homeless being the brunt of some political football game I see going on here.
So speaks the quarterback who is kicking them down the field.
If all council members looked into their heart of hearts, they would not want political campaigns run on the woes and tragedies of those who are the most vulnerable members of our community. I hope they will look into their hearts tonight and not support placing the homeless issue on some some excuse the expression, some political urinating contest, because it is just not right. Number six, perhaps I've said this already, but I'll say it again, the ballot language before us is just too confusing. So for all these reasons, because I want us to seriously address the causes of homelessness, the realities of being out of work and out of a house, and the serious lack of affordable housing in our community, none of which this initiative will do, I cannot support it. Because of the lack of support for this measure on either side of the issue, I believe further discussion would be fruitless, completely unproductive. Therefore, I make a motion to table this issue, item number 45B.
Motion to second to table the matter. No discussion is related on motion in favor. Yes, so we got to vote on it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 4-3. All right, one, two, one.
And that was that. That was the entire sleeping ban ballot debate. That's what people spent many hours working on to help improve this ballot measure, which Fitzmaurice advanced 2 weeks before. Crone and others knew that there were people had come to that meeting specifically to address the issue to improve the ballot measure, and what they got was his preemptively deciding that no one had a right to speak, no one had anything meaningful to say, and he used the Fitzmaurice initiative as a straw man to attack and deny that there was any need to change the sleeping ban law whatsoever. This puts us back to a situation we were at, I don't know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly 2 years ago, when it took many hours of hard work to show there was no magnet effect, to show that homeless people had to sleep at night, to show that there was not a large increase in social service demands in areas of the country that had ended their sleeping bans for one reason or another during those periods that sleeping ban was ended. Now all that has been forgotten because Christopher Crone is nervous about an election eve issue. In the studio with me, appearing, is a man who hopefully will be able to use the second mic. Say something into the second mic.
Good evening.
Is
it working?
I think that works. That's the voice you're hearing, of course, is that of Scope It Out, Scott Graham, who has just arrived, perhaps from a rally for a political candidate. What have you been doing, Scott?
Well, it wasn't so much as a rally, it's just a sort of a strategy meeting, which was not very well attended, I must lament.
You're talking, of course, about Stephen Argue, former jailbird and a defender of the rights of womanhood at political protests.
Right, yeah, he's, as you might know, running for city council, and so far I think he's probably the strongest candidate out there, as far as, you know, the true believers in the philosophy of the left-leaning nodes of your brain.
Well, you've been hearing me denounce Christopher Crone's gag speech at city council, as I call it, that ended the sleeping ban ballot proposal. Any comments on either what you saw on Tuesday night or what you've heard, the snatches you heard me say?
Well, the whole thing is, I knew all along that they were never going to put this on the ballot. And they went through all this posturing with David Silva. They got David to endlessly meet with them and make concessions till they finally boiled the thing down to a basically useless law that would do nothing to really... it would do something, but the point of re-emphasizing the illegalness of sleeping in vehicles doesn't make much sense, because not everyone has a camper or a Winnebago they're sleeping in. There's a lot of people that are just sleeping in cars, and they're not all that comfortable to sleep in. And if they had somewhere else to sleep, they would be sleeping there. But
I think what you're saying is that I guess what I be in a vehicle after 11 o'clock at night. Plus, this measure isn't going to have any legal force anyway unless the new council wants it to. And it seemed that was preposterous, but weren't the proposed changes that said, hey, sleeping is not camping, period, whether in a vehicle or outside, that the reasons for this are because of specifically the shelter emergency as endorsed by the following prestigious organizations, and the fact that there's violence against the homeless as endorsed by the police chief, surprisingly enough, and the fact that this would not be merely advisory, but this would be a true legal change, that would have given the voters at least an option. Would you yourself have thought that that would at least have been something that, had you seen it on the ballot, you would have voted for?
Well, I would vote for it, but myself, I don't really think that the right to sleep should be legislated. And I think that a former city council voted in this law, and the part of the law that covers sleeping should be just repealed, because it's not only unethical, but it just doesn't, you know, it's a human need. Everyone needs to sleep, and if you don't sleep, then you have all sorts of weird problems occur inside your brain. And so to me it would be a much better thing for the legislative body, being the city council, to just repeal the sleeping portion and to actually put the entire camping ban on the ballot. That would, to me, would make more sense. I mean, if you're going to do anything, let's deal with the entire thing.
You know, ironically, that might be a great idea, because the entire camping ban is so preposterous that I don't think it could get a vote of the electorate. I think the electorate would look at this and say, this is the stupidest thing we ever heard of. Maybe we've adopted the wrong approach. Maybe we should have said, hey, forget about finding a law that's a great idea. Let's put the current law up for a vote and see if anybody wants to keep it. If they don't, the city council will have to form a new law.
Right.
In fact, we can propose this at the next emergency city council meeting, which is going to be coming up. There are going to be two city council meetings, Monday and Tuesday. Perhaps you could get Tim Fitzmaurice to champion this new proposal, Scott.
I really doubt it. I don't think anyone's going to champion a proposal like that unless Steve Argue gets elected to city council.
And politicking again on my time, eh?
Well, it's just, I mean, I think as far as the camping ban goes, there's few people that are going to really, I think a majority of the people running for city council right now are going to try to duck the issue as much as possible.
You know, it's interesting. I left messages for every single city council candidate running except the woman named Bonnie, who just signed up, and I don't know who she is, and I haven't had a chance to call her. But I actually got calls back from two or three candidates, and two of them said, and I hadn't heard from this before, that they oppose the current sleeping ban.
The sleeping ban or the whole camping ban?
No, just the sleeping ban part.
Okay,
but we didn't talk about it. They may oppose the entire camping ordinance. I mean, actually, that's not as far-fetched and radical a position. The Homeless Issues Task Force, for example, which included Peter Eberle, the Downtown Business Association, Nancy Anicito of the Harvey West Association, did vote to suspend the entire camping and sleeping bans in December until safe zones were provided.
Right.
So I mean, they voted against an earlier resolution which got 10 votes with their two opposition, which said throw out the entire camping ordinance. But Community Action Board opposes the camping ban. Homeless Issues Task Force does. I'd say the Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women. It's not entirely clear whether it's just the sleeping ban sections or the camping ban that they oppose. But it's not by any means a wild-eyed radical proposal to say the camping ordinance as it's written has got to be thrown out. Something new has to be written. It's not that camping shouldn't be regulated. It's that when you have survival sleeping, you cannot criminalize that kind of sleeping, and you also have to provide reasonable facilities for people to do survival camping as well.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, this law would only make sense if there was enough places for people to sleep legally. Since those places aren't in existence, then it doesn't make sense to have a law that criminalizes sleeping or even camping. I mean, just putting up a tent or taking a few downed branches and lashing them together and putting a tarp above it, that's all of a sudden camping. You know, even if it's done on a nightly basis where you're not establishing a permanent camp. And so, to me, it's kind of ludicrous to not have a campground where people can legally camp out, or maybe even two or three campgrounds, so they wouldn't be that big and they wouldn't be, you know, looked at as being so out of control. Because if you have smaller areas, it might be a better idea. But the whole thing is if there is no place for people to go, then penalizing them for the fact there's nowhere for them to go by giving them tickets is ridiculous.
It's also a human rights violation, I would say, because you're punishing, as you pointed out, a human need. It's Huff issued a press release the next day. Huff is an organization called Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And by the way, you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM, and we have a call-in line in case you're interested in joining this discussion. We're talking about the restoring rights for homeless people and actually for the entire community, restoring face for the whole community and rights for those who have been denied them. And the call-in number here is 427-3772. The press release that was issued, I will read, but first, we have an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Homeless issue.
Okie doke.
And it seems to me that the abandoned police department would be a good place to start.
Yeah, why not? I mean, actually, interestingly enough, had the Fitzmaurice proposal passed, although the abandoned police department, I'm sure they will tell you, is earthquake unsafe or some such thing. That's the reason, one of the reasons they claim to have abandoned it.
Oh, yeah.
But, for example, City Hall and the grassy area around City Hall would have been one of the places, since it would be public property,
right,
where it would be legal for homeless people to sleep, had even the rather, I think, badly written Fitzmaurice ballot measure been put on the ballot, passed by the voters, and then passed by a subsequent city council.
Right. Well, it seems to me that what we have to do is figure out that the homeless people are obviously a minority in this community. Like in most communities, they're a minority, and they're not landed peoples, so therefore they're not really considered very important people. So what we have to do is try to figure out compassionately how we can approach the city council in a way that they understand that these people are just maybe not in the best of luck at the moment or whatever the situation is, but they still are dignified people that deserve the dignity to be able to put their head to bed without worrying about getting awoken and disturbed, because, you know, you do have a right to exist,
and
that's an irrevocable law, right that no one can take away from you ultimately. And if part of your existence is putting yourself to rest every night, I don't think you can illegalize that situation, especially you're not doing any harm. See, that's a peaceful thing you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're not causing any aggression of any kind. So therefore, it can't be an illegal act because it's a passive act.
I want to apologize, by the way, to you and to the listeners. My levels were very low when you first got on the phone, so I think you're actually now audible.
Okay, good.
So are you yourself, have you called Free Radio before? You're not a familiar voice.
Yeah, I've called a couple times, actually, and one time I called and you were near the end of a show and I was talking about using the bottom of the vet's hall as a nightly situation. Since the vets died for the country, I'm sure the vets would want to be honored, since many vets are homeless as well. They'd
yes.
want to honor their fellow brethren and sisters that are in the unfortunate circumstance of not having a place to sleep.
Huh.
So I think the vets' halls around the country, actually, should be, after 9 o'clock, open to anybody that needs a place to stay, and I think that should be part of the tradition of the vets.
Are you near your radio?
No.
Oh, okay, because Scott here in the studio has a said that the vets' hall was actually at one time tried as a...
Well, it was only homeless vets stayed there.
She said that homeless vets were staying there for a while. I know that police were harassing the vets hall for doing that, and the Bill Motto troop that was, I guess, involved in partially running the vets hall, or running at least one of the rooms in there.
Right. Well, I talked to Bill Motto once at the flea market about peace paying good dividends, and part of the dividends that peace pays is a lot of the money that's being put towards military weaponry can be put into building decent housing for people, which shouldn't be a major problem.
You would hope so.
Especially economically, since the B-1 bomber is $1 billion, I think, cancel the B-1s and put them into housing. So my basic reason to call is basically say, I really appreciate your show and everything. It just seems like an uphill Sisyphus battle of trying to push this rock of, what would you say, unconcern or people's lack of interest, basically. The majority of people, I would
part
say,
of that
don't
is
care.
True. Well, part of it, they think that the city council is going to carry the ball for them. The city council engages in these deceptive maneuvers.
Right.
You know, they say, oh, yeah, we're going to have safe zones. Oh, yeah, we have a homeless issues task force. Oh, you know, task force for the examination of the camping ordinance. Oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And, of course, they end up, as Scott has pointed out, doing nothing at all. They attempt to kind of stage manage situations so they can get through the winter months where there's most pressure on them, because they, you know, people are most sympathetic and compassionate, until they can get to, oh, this is the election. Now everybody has to pull together and not get such a controversial issue on the ballot or even brought forward by the city council.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's interesting. What's been proposed, by the way, there have been some people who now say that the only thing we can do now is to do peaceful but very widespread civil disobedience in the way that I guess some folks are planning to do in Philadelphia and in Los Angeles at the two conventions, and to some extent that's been tried by Earth First folks, you know, who do tree sits and things of that sort. And so there, I guess there's going to be a... Becky Johnson has talked about starting a candlelit light vigil to kind of kick off the CD campaign on Monday night. It's going to be right at the City Council is going to have its one of its schmooze the business meetings at City Council in the afternoon at 3 o'clock on Monday, and then they're going to, I'm sorry, at the library at 3 o'clock, and then on Tuesday at 3 o'clock they have another City Council meeting. I'm sorry, it's 2 o'clock on Monday and 3 o'clock on Tuesday, but I guess. Becky Johnson is calling for a candlelight vigil. Maybe she'll call in and give us some more details at City Hall at night. And I think she has something in mind in terms of some sort of civil disobedience action, and I don't know quite what it is, and maybe it's going to be a surprise.
I see. Well, I wish the situation as much good luck as it can get, and it just seems to me that sleeping is part of life, and nobody should be considered doing something illegal when they're just trying to rest. I don't think rest is an active aggression of any kind. So I think basically it's a nonviolent, peaceful reality, and I think if you're doing something peacefully, peace officers should not disturb the peace. So thank you very much.
Don't get arrested for getting rested.
Yeah, don't try. Yeah, just for resting. Yeah, you
thank
can be
you.
Arrested for resting. Thank
all right.
you.
All righty.
Well, it's hard to argue with that one, and I wouldn't bother. I was going to talk a bit about this press release that Huff issued, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, but we pretty much covered it. There is an article in today's Mercury News, Camping Measure Falters. I actually got a... Well, it's not quite trashed in here, but the main points I kept trying to make, the writer, Ken McLaughlin, kept ignoring, which is 700 to 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz. Violence rate of 10 times that of people in houses against them. No legal places to sleep. Every night the situation reoccurs. You know, what are we thinking of? And those stats have never appeared in a Mercury News story that I'm aware of. Never. The Sentinel actually has occasionally come out with it, though it didn't mention it at its in its story yesterday that I'm aware of. There is another issue, however, that I want to bring up. I'm going to actually soon be giving a call to get to switch over to San Jose, but before we do... I think what I want to do is discuss another issue that we have been covering with some regularity here on the show, that of the rights and needs of low-income Latino people, or of people who are suddenly confronted with city projects that seem to be meant with some amount of beneficence and good intentions. I'm talking, of course, about the Dolphin Lee. I guess Dolphin Lee Rex Court Project was what it was proposed as, a proposal, $12.5 million, quote, affordable housing project that proposed to, initially, to demolish the Dolphin and Lee apartments down there half a block from the boardwalk on LeBrant Street, as well as the Rex Court apartments, block off the street, and set up a sort of a fancier project that would have provided less housing for people, would not have met the housing needs of the people even who are living there now. It would have been certainly upscale for those who did get in from those who were from the current living situation, although it depends whether you like living in housing projects and whether you like Mercy Charities Housing as your housing provider and your housing operator. And there's been some concern about Neri Lagoon people and Sycamore Grove people who have real doubts about Mercy Charities and concerns and criticisms. And we, our main criticism here, at least mine, with the organization Residente Unidos, and I know, Scott, you've been following this issue for at least a year and a half, probably longer.
Right. Well, I've been following it in its latest incarnation, but since it first started, when I came upon a document from the Mercy Charities to the council laying out the whole Dolphin Lee project. This was before They started talking about it openly in city council, and the city, mainly Tim Fitzmaurice, was denying the existence of this Dolphin Lee project right from the very beginning.
And Tim Fitzmaurice, one of the three new, 2 years ago, council members, and unfortunately one of the three who will be leading the city council in November. In fact, he'll be the mayor. Right?
Well, I mean, the way it normally goes, the vice mayor becomes the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
So if all things go normally, but depending on who gets elected, I mean, there could be some jockeying here, and they could decide to skip Tim as mayor and put somebody else in. Or maybe they'll let Keith be mayor twice because he did such a good job with you, Robert.
Indeed. What a thought. You know, what I'd like to do, rather than...
Well, that was a question I had for you, Robert.
Yes.
When Catherine was mayor, did she ever tell you to shut up? Did she ever shut the mic off on you?
Catherine Byers never shut down the mic on me. I think... She may have threatened to arrest some of the speakers. I don't recall if she ever threatened to arrest me. Celia Scott never threatened to arrest anybody.
Well, when Celia was mayor, Rockin and Kennedy were always yelling at you, though.
Oh, well, I tend to provoke a broad response from some members of the council community. Rather than give the history of the Dolphin League, which we usually do, and it usually takes about 20 minutes, then we end up having 5 minutes to talk, which isn't good, I would like to go directly into the city council debate on Tuesday. Usually, Dolphin Lee appears on the closed agenda. We've been seeing this time and time again. There have been a few exceptions, but it's generally appeared on the closed agenda where the community has no real access except you can speak to the closed session beforehand. And indeed, that was done by Residente Unidos at one very historic session where there were, 10 or 12 speakers. They had to move the entire meeting to the larger chambers because for the first time in the history of Santa Cruz City Council that I know of, there were so many people who demanded to speak before the closed session because they knew that even though they couldn't get into the closed session, that the real decisions would be made at that session, and they needed to make their arguments before the session.
Well, and then out of that closed session meeting came these demands that the city made on the residents and the property owner, which I considered very unreasonable demands considering what had taken place up to that point.
Well, let me read the press release that Huff issued on this and then start playing the tape that of the city council. We'll stop it at any point you want to make a comment about how you want to enlighten the audience or make some historical comparisons. This is the press release. Byers giveth, Byers taketh away. Council kills affordable housing for Lee apartment Latinos. In October of 1999, lame duck council member Catherine Byers moved to identify the Dolphin Lee properties at 124, 126, and 136 Lee Brand Avenue as the, quote, top priority for developing an affordable housing project in the Beach Flats without any significant public comment or consideration of alternatives. The Byers motion revived an old project by the controversial Mercy Charities Housing designed to be the sole source provider, planner, builder, developer, manager, and owner. As proposed, the project would have provided significantly less housing than currently exists, 48 rather than 63 units, displaced 70 to 100 Latino families at a cost of millions of dollars, total estimated project cost $12.5 million, and made many of them homeless without apology. Not a single resident was at the meeting that voted in the project, nor did Byers meet with the tenants once in the following months, in spite of repeated invitations and pleas.
Although she said the other night she would be willing to meet with them.
After having destroyed their project. Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. Residents then organized as Residentes Unidos to demand real guarantees of relocation, return, and adequate housing, and a significant partnership in the process. Residentes Unidos successfully sought Santa Cruz Action Network, SCAN, that is, and community support, for slowing down the process to include the tenants to get adequate guarantees in a tumultuous general membership meeting where Mayor Keith Sugar was later asked to resign by Councilmember Hernandez for inaccurately describing Latino living conditions as squalid, filthy, and packed in like sardines. Stung by the public exposure of its racist perceptions and process, the Byers-Rotkin-Sugar majority stepped up pressure on the tenants, refusing to negotiate and demanding access to the property with building inspectors by July 14th and private interviews. Resident de Unidos and property owner Vernon Lee agreed to a rent freeze on the property and a deal not to sell the property to anyone else but the city, but suggested the city needed to negotiate with the tenants on the guarantees before Lee would give up information that would allow the city to acquire the property by force of eminent domain proceedings.
In retaliation, on Tuesday afternoon, July 25th, two nights ago, Byers, with Mayor Sugar's seconding, adopted a divide-and-conquer policy in a motion to buy the Dolphin Apartments and Pink Palace, that's Rex Court property, and force Mercy Charity's housing management on them over the express wishes of the tenants there, suspend negotiations with Lee Apartments, and look for other sites with a less active tenant group. The 5-2 vote, Hernandez and Crone dissenting, also ordered the end of the Relocation Advisory Committee. The Relocation Advisory Committee was an official council-designated and appointed committee that had a tenant majority and has been prevented from meeting for the last 2 months by the city-appointed chair, Yolanda Goda, and redevelopment agency head, Seal Cirillo. At its last meeting, the Relocation Advisory Committee, by unanimous vote, and that was back on May 30th, I believe, rejected Cirillo's replacement housing plan for the Dolphin Lee as inadequate, demanded the council discuss the guarantees it had been avoiding for 3 months, and sent Hernandez and Fitzmaurice to get some answers from the full City Council Redevelopment Agency. At the June 13th Council Redevelopment Agency meeting, Fitzmaurice declined to discuss much more than a rousing and tenant-rejected reaffirmation of Mercy Charity's housing with the full council in public session. And since Relocation Advisory Committee meetings were canceled, Fitzmaurice never had to face the Relocation Advisory Committee for abandoning his charge to discuss the guarantees. Nena Ruiz, Residentes Unidos spokesperson, wrote to City Council after the meeting, "I am ashamed of the council for punishing these tenants for trying to get guarantees. This is something anyone would do if it was concerning their homes. These tenants are not going to sit around and let council members that are on their way out, four council members will be not returning in November, do such an unfair and retaliatory act. We will fight all the way, believe me. Residentes Unidos is still seeking guarantees for the Dolphin tenants." Mayor Keith Sugar betrayed his promise to hold fast for guarantees, negotiate with the tenants, and present their position to City Council, all without a word of warning, commented Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom worker Becky Johnson. Is it so hard for City Council to be fair to poor people of color who organize together? Boy, it'd be nice if Christopher Crone would call into this show. He actually was one of the good votes that said stop the, let the Dolphin, don't vote to jettison the lead apartment tenants and try to do this off to the side with the Dolphin Apartments. We're going to begin to hear the debate, but before we do, Scott, what's the significance of saying that you're not going to negotiate with the Lee Apartments and then instead proceed with the project with the Dolphin Apartments and the so-called Pink Palace Rex Court? If you favor the project, then it's a good idea to go ahead with the Dolphin tenants. If you oppose the project, then the Lee people are getting out of it to their benefit. What's anybody got to complain about?
Well, the big problem that I see is that they really don't have a project now. They actually ended this current project, and what they're doing is they're just buying these two pieces of property, and they're going to do what they call land banking them, because they can do that without a replacement housing plan or anything like that approved. And so basically they killed the entire project the other day. It wasn't just that they nixed the Lee property from the project, but they killed the whole project. But what will happen is once the city officially owns the Dolphin property, those people will then be under the rule of the Mercy Charities. Mercy Charities will become the managers of that property. Right now, Maria Gutierrez is, and I think most of the people that live there are happy with her. And I don't think they'll be very happy with Mercy running the place.
You're on free radio.
Hello? Hello?
Crank call.
Looks like a deadline. Call back, caller. We do want you to call in. Let's try again. You are listening to Scott Graham and Robert Norris talking about the Dolphin Lee demolition plan. I guess the plan itself has been demolished, and now what's happening, according to Scott, is the city is going to acquire the Dolphin property, which has, what, 48 units with
No, it has, I think, 32 units.
32 units, total of 48 units if you include both the Dolphin and the Lee, but 32 units with what, more than 50 or 60 families in them?
Well, supposedly Mekki Myers and Associates, basically Biff Nordstrom, interviewed the people that live there and identified 52 household units.
In the Dolphin alone?
Right. That's they don't call them families, they call them household units.
So we've got 52 units living in the Dolphin, and you have a situation where Mercy Charity's housing is going to arrive, and is it, what are they going to do when they get there? Let's we've got an incoming call. Let's see if we can actually grab this caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, this is Becky Johnson calling. I was sort of curious to hear Scott's comments about the report that the redevelopment agency had that there were 33 units.
Can you turn down your radio? Getting a bit. I think we're okay there. Scott's going to have a little trouble hearing you, maybe with these
okay,
earphones.
Okay, I can repeat the question. I would just want to hear Scott's comments about the redevelopment agency and their report in June to the council that they said that the Mekki and Myers had reported that there were 33 households at the Dolphin, which of course is a 32-unit building. And I'll take my answer on the air.
Okay.
Bob.
All righty.
Did you catch that question, Scott?
Part of it.
The question is, she understands that the Mekki Myers L.A. relocation firm hired by the city council to schmooze the tenants up and out of the housing said there were only 33 families in the Dolphin. You heard something different, is what you're saying.
I thought at the meeting that they said 52. They identified 52 household units. So maybe I heard it wrong, but that's what I thought I remembered them saying.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello.
Oops. Another one of those crackly hang-ups. Well, let's turn to the actual city council debate. And at any point, Scott, just signal me. We'll stop the tape if you've got comments to make.
Likewise with you, Robert.
All right. Well, thank you.
Passes unanimously. We will hear oral communication on the redevelopment agency calendar later in the evening. All right, on to item number 4. We have a staff presentation. This is a report on the proposed Beach Flats housing property acquisition.
Hey, can I make a quick suggestion? Just to,
yes.
If you could give the people who are here and a bunch of other afternoon agenda items, one that we're going to come back to them at the end of the evening, or whatever you're going to propose, that might make people
Sure.
Happy.
Well, that's fair enough.
Spend a moment to do that first before you move on.
Yeah, basically we're going to take them in order. We left off to discuss about the item number 45A was our last one. We, after oral communication in the evening, we will resume with a vote on the
This is just kind of some housekeeping, but he's about to go into the redevelopment agency agenda. There were many Hispanic people in the audience brought by Residente Unido's manager, Nena Ruiz, and Julie Costanza Gomez, the manager of the Lee property. And there are, I guess, probably a few Dolphin folks there as well, though Maria Gutierrez, I believe, is still out of the country. She's the manager for the Dolphin Apartments.
Folks know if they don't want to stay around.
Okay. Very well. Seal.
Members of the agency, on June 13th and June 27th at agency meetings, staff was given some direction with respect to the proposed Beach Flats housing project at 124, 126 Librant, 136 Librant, and 131, 133. But specifically, staff was instructed to communicate with the property owner of 124, 126 to obtain access to the properties with a July 14th deadline in order for the agency to make decisions concerning the project prior to the August recess. During this period of time, we've had meetings and correspondence with the owner of the property and his manager agent, Julie Costanza Gomez, and I've attached copies of the various correspondence between the parties, including a letter dated July 12th from Ms. Costanza Gomez indicating that we were not able to obtain access to the property.
Now, what about that, Scott? This became a point of some contention, and actually the pretext, or if you want the reason, if you want to give them that, that they that many of the council members said, well, they won't let us on the property, there's nothing we can do, we're going to have to dump the Lee property and go after the other property. What was that all about?
Well, basically what it is all along they've wanted this information on the tenants there. They wanted to know how many people live in each unit, you know, what their income levels are, all this. Legally, they need this information to formulate a relocation plan and a replacement housing plan.
Yet you said that they don't need that kind of information to land bank the property. Couldn't they simply do what they're doing, what you're suggesting they're going to do with the Dolphin and Pink Palace, and buy and land bank the Lee property?
Well, they can't. I don't think they can do that unless they have a willing seller. If Vernon Lee was unwilling to sell to them without them first making some sort of agreement with the tenants, then I don't believe they could go ahead and eminent domain land on which low-income people reside without first doing these other two things, which is the replacement housing plan and the relocation plan.
So because the owner of the Dolphin, Terry McElroy, is a willing seller, and in fact, has been grumbling that Lee has been digging in his heels and paying too much attention to these tenants and so forth, they can proceed to buy the property, evict all the tenants if they want, and demolish it and land bank, and they do that?
They could, actually. They could make that a precondition of the sale, is that McElroy evict everyone. And because actually in many transactions that happen, that is part of, like, especially in single family homes where someone's buying a house that's currently being rented and they want to live in it or whatever, they make that a condition of buying the home that the current owner evict the current tenants before.
And isn't that what happened over in the Pink Palace to some extent, that this property was owned by the Seaside Company, Canfield, and it was, while perhaps not the smartest property in town, still livable and usable, but then Canfield evicted everybody.
Right.
The property gets run down, the property value drops, the city has to pay less, doesn't have to pay relocation funding for the tenants there. I mean, it all seems a part of a rather nasty, dare I say it, conspiracy?
Well, you know, at the very least, I think what could happen with the Dolphin is that once the city takes it over, Mercy is going to start imposing this these federal guidelines on how many people can live per unit. And once they start doing that, you're going to get rid of anywhere from half to two-thirds of the people living there. Because, you know, the guidelines are two people per room, plus, you know, if you have, say, a two-bedroom, two people per room, plus an extra person. So you only get that extra person per household. You don't get it per room. So if, you know, if there's two bedrooms, that means five people could live there. If it's a single bedroom place, then three people could live there. Or if it's a studio, three people could live there. And most of these places have many more than three people living in them, and most of them are studios or one bedroom units.
We left Seal Cirilla, redevelopment agency head, saying that they were not allowed access, and on June 27th, City Council demanded access to the property and demanded private interviews with the tenants, and also they demanded access not just by what would you call it? What's the person who assesses the value of the property? Appraiser.
They've already had an appraiser.
But indeed, they had already appraised it, in March or February, and there'd been an offer, a very low offer for the property, I understand, considerably less than that they offered the Dolphin, although their properties are comparable size, and they were intending to demolish the buildings, the purpose, the fact that there were buildings on them wouldn't have made any difference. So the city, according to Seal Cirilla, wanted building inspectors on the property, but, and I guess some people would say, well, you need to know if these properties are refurbishable, but do building inspectors make judgments about whether properties are refurbishable?
Not really. I mean, in the normal world, like if you go to buy a home, you go to your bank, and your bank will actually send, it's somebody like a building inspector or like an assessor, but they also have like a working knowledge of, how much it's going to cost to repair certain things. You know, if there's structural problems, how much what's entailed in fixing it, and how much it'll cost. And a lot of times when you buy a home, the bank will then take that information and say, well, the loan that we're going to give you is going to be for X number of dollars more because the home needs this amount of repairs. And without these repairs, we're not willing to loan you the money. So basically, you know, you get the loan for the home plus this extra loan to repair it, and then you repair the place. And the city wasn't doing anything like that. I mean, they could have hired one of these independent people that the banks hire to do such a thing, but instead they wanted to send building inspectors in, and that's kind of ominous because the way things were heading, if there was enough resistance continued by the tenants themselves, then the city still wouldn't have been able to go ahead with with this whole thing, and they could have came in and retaliated. You know, the retaliation could have been much greater because they could have came in and red tagged the buildings, which would have forced all the tenants out, and then the landlord would have had to pay for 3 months of rent for the evicted tenants. So I think that what they were asking was totally unreasonable because they were asking for access to the tenants all along. They knew the tenants were against that. The tenants didn't want to give up the information. The tenants wanted guarantees. All these promises that had been made to them by the city council, by the redevelopment agency, and by Mercy Housing, they wanted them in formal guarantees that were legally defensible.
They wanted guarantees that they would be, one, given housing to live in while this project was being built, and two, assured return to the project. And what they really also wanted was a real voice in planning the project so that there would be adequate housing built, so that unnecessary projects like a child care center, a community center, would not be tacked on, and hopefully even expanding the project to reconsider options like building on vacant land, like refurbishing the existing housing instead of tearing it all down. These are things that I think that they were interested in doing. In fact, I think they are still interested in doing this. And we've heard from Nena Ruiz, who wrote a letter after this meeting. She was rather angry at the city council that she's still going to be working with the Dolphin and Lee tenants. This looks to her like an attempt to divide the Dolphin and Lee tenants. And I guess the question is, do the Dolphin tenants have any recourse, any kind of solidarity that the community can give with them if McElroy just sells out the property? And what kind of a timetable are we looking at here?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things that can be done. Is that the Dolphin tenants themselves can get organized enough to say, we don't want Mercy Charities, or to say, we want the manager of this property to be our decision, not the city council's decision, or we want some sort of say in who manages this property. And I think, you know, they could put a lot of pressure on the city to do that, especially, you know, as we're heading into the election. The other thing that could happen is, once the city takes possession of the Dolphin and Rex Court, I would suggest that anybody out there in the community that wants to do a squat at Rex Court and turn it into a full-blown political football for the upcoming election.
Hey, it could be a homeless shelter for folks at the Rex Court, the property across the street from the Dolphin and Lee. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert. It's Uncle Dennis.
Hey, Dennis. What's the good word?
Well, I wanted to remind Free Radio Santa Cruz listeners who care about helicopter logging in Santa Cruz County that there is a hearing going on right now.
Whoa.
In the Board of Supervisors chambers, fifth floor, at the county building, 701 Ocean Street.
Mm-hmm.
And the THP that the helicopter logging is being proposed for is just north of Vine Hill Road off of Highway 17. So,
are they going to swoop down and get old Blackbird, or?
No, this is right on Highway 17. Blackbird is down by Mount Madonna.
I see.
Okay, this is a helicopter logging operation near Vine Hill, and if folks have any opinions about helicopter logging in Santa Cruz County, or specifically this THP, they should go to the Board of Supervisors chambers right now and tell the CDF.
How long
will
this be going on, Dennis?
What's that?
How long will this be going on?
This is actually a small the hearing.
Yeah.
Probably for another hour.
So from 7:30 to 8:30, come to 701 Ocean Street, 5th floor of the county building, and speak your piece again and summarize the issue for us, Dennis.
Helicopter logging in Santa Cruz County.
Gotcha. And are you going to be on the air at 8 o'clock as usual?
I'll be on the air at 8 o'clock.
Listen, if you want to give up a half hour of your show, I'd be happy to take it over. You may be needed at the Board of Supervisors hearing.
That's okay, Robert. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Dennis.
All right, bye.
Well, get down to the hearing, all you folks who don't think that they should be helicoptering up the area. Let's get here a little bit more of the Dolphin Lee from Seal Cirillo's, the horse's mouth, so to speak.
Excuse me, could you just clarify that they would not grant access?
They would not
access?
grant access. I don't know whether this is being translated at this time. Are you translating, Elizabeth? Okay, thank you. In the light of that action, staff is now requesting direction on how we want to proceed with the project and what the status of the continuation of a relocation advisory committee should be.
I know it seems I'm interrupting every other minute, but again, the thing to be said is that Julie Costanza Gomez, the manager of the property, actually wrote a letter which to Seal Cirillo a week or two before, in which she said that they would allow access to the property at a future time, and that they also would clarify, I guess one of the concerns of the council was that there'll be a lot of people squatting in these apartments and demanding all these ritzy guarantees, and they said, well, Julie Costanza Gomez said, we will deposit a letter with an attorney giving the exact names and stats on all the families, but it will not be allowed to, it will not be presented to the city council until such time as there is real serious negotiating and agreement between the city council and the residents or the tenants. And she also said, I believe that the tenants would be allowed access to the Veronica Lopez Duran, who was, you know, offering to talk to them, wanted to talk to them, but that would be off-site. They would have to go off the property to do it because of the concern that building inspectors might use this opportunity, far be it for me to suggest any dirty dealing by the city, but possibly to prepare for red tagging or yellow tagging. Any comment on that, Scott?
Well, that's what I was just saying. I think that's exactly what they had in mind. They wanted to come in there, inspect the place, and if they couldn't get what they wanted out of the tenants, and they would use these red tags as a way to retaliate against the tenants and the landlord.
And, of course, the question that we asked, and you'll hear this in the tape if we have enough time tonight, again and again, was why the hurry? I mean, is there a funding deadline in September that requires this deal be completed, or October or November? You know, I mean, there's a new council coming in November, and there's a lot of controversy around this project. Why the rush? And the answer seems to be to stop the tenants from acquiring any power in this situation. I mean, that's my analysis.
The Relocation Advisory Committee was established last winter. There have been...
Cirillo.
The purpose of the Advisory Committee was to review and input the preparation of the replacement housing plan and the relocation housing plan. I won't go into any of those meetings except to say that the proposed bylaws had indicated that meetings would be held on the third Thursday of each month.